Hotel, New Mexico.
Greetings and welcome to episode 54 of the Unnormal Paranormal Podcast. Everyone agrees that ghost stories are both fun to tell and listen to, but interpreting the motivations for them and the meaning behind them are definitely up for debate. Join us for a roundtable discussion on ghost stories. We'll be right back.
You're listening.
Yeah, like all the time I'm listening.
To the Unnormal Paranormal Podcast, thanks for listening. And we'll be back in one moment.
Ooh, like this story we got me in orbit.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Unnormal Paranormal Podcast. Today, we're doing something very, very important. Today, we're going to be telling ghost stories. It is my personal opinion that anybody who's into the paranormal at all, especially what are you doing to the levels? Go ahead. We're going to keep going. Anybody who's into the paranormal, especially regarding ghosts, spirits, demons, what have you, probably got their start off of a ghost story. Ghost stories are pretty much lore. It's spread by word of mouth. There's something extra gripping about somebody who's had an experience sitting down and telling you intimately and personally what they've seen, what they've been through, their facial expressions, really, really working hard to push the story across to you so that you feel it. My own obsession with the paranormal started pretty much the same way.
Is this an introduction?
This is our introduction.
Okay.
I'm trying to give you the
background.
I'm trying to explain what's going on in our heads, why we're going to sit here and talk about and tell ghost stories today.
Love it. Love it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, thanks to the internet, it's even easier to tell ghost stories. Unfortunately, it's also easier to make them up. Plenty of sites out there where you can find people recounting this, that, or the other thing about what came walking through their wall or what popped out of their dishwasher or what decided to crawl in bed with them one night and get extra frisky. And usually in horrifying, horrifying graphic verbal detail. But I am still one for a good old-fashioned word-of-mouth ghost story. Today, we've brought two guests on. We have Lindy Baker from good old Los Angeles, California. Please say hi.
Hello.
Okay, there she is. I was going to say, I thought I scared her off. Seductive.
She always has a seductive voice at the beginning.
my seductive voice.
We have Lindy Baker from Los Angeles, California.
My shy voice.
Yeah, who called the whole way here to be on the show. And we also have our friend Kathy Dawson from Puyallup, Washington?
Puyallup,
Washington. I knew I was going to screw that up.
Bless you.
I should have just said Seattle. Just not giving the crap and just said Seattle callously and carelessly. You and Miranda are very closely acquainted and have been for years, as well as you, yourself, and Jeff.
Yeah.
This is the first time I'm actually getting to speak to you. But,
yeah, it's the first time I spoke with you, too.
No, it's nice to finally actually talk voice to voice.
Stop fantasizing. Yeah. And you two can really?
Really?
I could take that out.
Where did that come from?
I could take that out.
I think Jeff fantasizes about us fantasizing about each other. And here I am locked in a quiet room with him down in the basement.
Well, just make sure Jeff is taking his Beano.
A safe word is...
Yeah, oh, that's a story in and of itself,
TMI,
Kathy.
TMI.
He's sitting down here breathing heavily. He's gonna
say,
he's gonna sit down.
We have an EVP to back that claim up, so yeah, I can't do much about that.
Yes, that's what can I
blame it on the ghost, right? Blame it on the ghost.
That's
he
what
tried to.
And if you can't, then blame it on the dog.
Well, there's a little story behind that. We were in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
This does not count as Jeff's ghost story, by
no,
the way.
This doesn't. But it's a quickie, but a good one too. We're in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and we're with Rhonda, one of our hosts, and Matt James was with us.
Or Marble?
Marbles is his nickname. And anyway, you were asking Matt questions about, well, how did the soldiers go to bathroom during the Civil War? And Matt goes, well, they dug latrines, and during that time, I kind of let out with a military salute of my own, and it was loud. It was so loud that I had to actually turn the volume down because we shot it out as a joke EVP, as a soldier giving you an answer. And I could actually put that on the show notes. Do you think people would want to, James, do you think people would appreciate that one?
Yeah.
Which one?
I think you could do a whole show on just guys farting, personally.
Oh, it was very timely.
I had 9 brothers. Yeah, so go ahead.
You and Rhonda both recoiled in fear, primal fear, but and Matt was laughing. So that's the story. If you folks want to hear it, go to our website at www.unnormalparanormal.com. Click on the show link for this episode, and we'll have the EVP there for you to listen to if you want to.
That's right. Jeff's going to have a special recording of his butt just for you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just this one time only.
It won't be the last time, folks. It probably will not be the last time.
Nah.
So anyway, this is our ghost story episode. Lindy, you being a psychic medium, you have had more than your share of contact with the other side. So we'll let you start out with belt out one of your best tunes and we'll get the ball rolling.
I think the first story that I want to tell is I've always had a lot of spirits at my house, and sometimes people would come to my house and they'd actually have the experience too with TVs turning off and on and other kind of phenomenon. And so I had a girlfriend and she came to the house and she was spending the night at my house. And there'd been quite a few people that had seen a man walking through our house, a ghost man walking through our house. In fact, I have a very good picture of my son at about 14 years old, and you can see the ghost right beside him. And for the people that are listening, you can take pictures of spirit, and it seems like the instant cameras work a whole lot better than even your cell phone does. People might get orbs on the phone. But if you use one of the old, what do you call it?
Polaroid.
Polaroid, yeah. If you use a Polaroid, it captures them really well. And they do like to have their picture taken. So if you've heard anything about that, they run from flash or they prefer dark. It's not true. They're there during the day. But anyway, so my girlfriend was sleeping on our couch, and my husband and I were in our bed, and this was in the middle of the night that it ends up in the middle of the night. I've got this screaming woman jumping into bed in between my husband and I and pulling our covers up over her head, shivering and shaking down underneath the covers. And she says, oh, my God, I saw your ghost.
Oh, wow.
I saw your ghost. And we said, kind of like, well, what are you talking about? Because you just woke us up. But it was the same description as other people had made, too, that they said it was a guy with very dark, curly hair, about 6'2", and he had a flannel, red and white plaid kind of shirt on. And what happened with her is she said she was laying there sleeping, and she had been, drinking wine before she went to sleep. So she thought that my husband had woken up and come in and covered her up. And she said she kind of had that, still kind of woozy kind of feeling. And so she said to him, she kind of half rolled over and says, oh, thank you so much. I was cold. And he said, you're very welcome. And she was looking him right in the face, and he said, you're very welcome. And then she realized it wasn't my husband at all.
Wow.
So she sat up, she freaked. And so here we have this lady in the middle of the bed. I actually have one brother that said that he would never stay at my house again because the spirit activity was always there. And they were always very friendly. Spirit was always very friendly. And he would not stay at my house anymore. And he swore that when he spent the night at my house one time that he actually levitated to the ceiling. He said he levitated and he was about a foot from the ceiling and he woke up and he was just like so afraid. That we actually woke up in the morning and he was sleeping out in the front seat of his car, of his truck. So he was that afraid of being at my house. But anyway, so that's one of my ghost stories. So somebody else could jump in there and talk about theirs.
Kathy, you want to go ahead?
Sure. I'm going to have to back up a little bit to tell the story, though. It was back in the mid-70s, and my mom had gotten a sabbatical from work, and she decided to take us back to Maine. which is where she was born and raised and where her family was at. And we went back to visit. And we stayed out at my grandfather's cabin out at the lake, but occasionally we would have to go into town to do grocery shopping and laundry and whatnot. And I remember we had driven back into town and we got to my grandfather's house and I had a bad headache. And so my mom says, well, why don't you take some aspirin and then go lay down on one of the beds upstairs in one of the bedrooms. And I said, okay. So I went upstairs and of course the configuration of the house, that my grandfather's house, was at the top of the stairs. There was a bedroom right off to the left and one off to the right. And you can actually see into the other room. They were directly across the hall from each other. And I remember my grandfather didn't even have curtains on the windows, and I don't know why. I don't even think he went upstairs. I think his bedroom was down on the ground floor. And so I lay down on the bed. I was almost asleep. And you know that feeling that you get when you're being watched or stared at?
Yes. Kind of.
I got that. Yeah, I got that feeling in spades. And I remember waking up and just knowing that there was somebody staring at me, and I, in whatever it was not friendly. Mm. It actually had a very malevolent feeling. It was very angry and it didn't want me there. And I picked that up right off the bat. And I was 12 years old at the time when this happened. And I thought, okay, don't move. I don't want it to come any closer, whatever it was. And so I barely cracked my eyes open, and sure enough, I saw this huge shadow figure of a man standing in the bedroom doorway, and I could see right through it into the room across the hall. And this was a bright, sunny day. This was in broad daylight.
Wow.
And it actually looked like it was smoke. It was like the figure was made of smoke, because I could see it swirling around in this figure. And I swear to God, this lasted probably a good 15, 20 seconds. And then my brother and my sister started coming up the stairs and it just kind of disappeared, vaporized.
Mm.
And mm. I thought, okay, I'm getting up and I'm going back downstairs. And so I was very happy that my brother and sister had come upstairs, because like they kind of rescued me in a sense.
No doubt.
And so I went back downstairs. I didn't say a word. And I finally told my mother about this when I was like in my mid-30s. And she says, well, how come you didn't tell me about this sooner? And I says, Mom, I was 12. Would you have believed me? And she says, yeah, you're right. I probably wouldn't have. But I had asked my mom had some family visit here about 5 years ago. And I had asked my aunt and my uncle if they had noticed anything. And they said, well, that's not the house your mom grew up in. That was the house your grandfather moved into. And I said, oh, I wonder if I could go back and check it out. And they said, well, it burned down a number of years later. So there's nothing left to go check out. That was my first real experience with the paranormal. And I'll tell you what, it scared the living daylights out of me.
As she's talking about that, I was just having these flashes in here in Kirkland. And so I was just having these flashes, and it's almost like that there was something there that was like a dimensional opening that I was seeing while you were talking about that.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
And I do know that there are, extraterrestrial beings. I do know that. And that's what I was just feeling, is maybe that there was, based on only what I was seeing right now, if you were expressing yourself, that I just got that there was like this split in the dimensions, and somehow or another that being was popping out of there. So kind of like not even like a real ghost, but like, I don't know what, a parallel universe or something popping out of there. Anyway, that's my take on it as a clairvoyant. Yeah.
I would think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Do you know anything about those things, James?
Which things?
Have you heard of those kind of things? I don't study on parallel universes and dimensions and stuff.
I suppose it could be possible. Yeah, I'm definitely not going to sit here and tell you, no, it's not possible. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, yes, it's absolutely what happened, because I don't know.
I was just wondering if you had any kind of experiences with it.
I have seen some stuff that would curl your toenails.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. I guess that means it's my turn.
You're about as close to haunted, James, as I've ever seen a person before, you know?
I can't get the fuck away from it. Yeah, I've actually, that was actually our first two episodes, wasn't it? Baddest, scariest ghost story is actually our first two episodes. I'm not going to sit and retell that long-ass series of events here on this episode, so if you want to, go back to the website at www.unnormalparanormal.com. Look for episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah, we were a little rough back in those days.
Yeah, we were. But, you know, it wasn't an awful experience. Mm-hmm. That's why I decided I was comfortable signing on and doing the show with you guys.
Yeah.
Because I like you guys. I trust you guys. We do good work together.
I don't know if I told you guys this, but we were in the second floor of Rhonda's house.
Yes.
There was about 15 seconds of audio of a man coming into the room and just talking. Now, I wasn't there at the time. I had to go. I had a family obligation. Then I came back the next day to get the equipment. Anyway, you guys didn't hear it, obviously. But on the recording of our second episode, it was our first or second recording, you hear a man's voice for about 15 seconds. And he's not fitting in the conversation. He's not addressing either you or Rhonda. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that would be Cameron, the landlord's son, who was coming home from work. I saw Cameron, and I said, hey, Cameron, did you happen to stop by on Sunday, on October, whatever day it was, up to the second floor? He goes, no, I wasn't there. I wasn't home all day. It was somebody else's voice, and it wasn't Mark.
Mark
is in his late 50s, and this was like a young man, like a teenager. You know, like in his early, late teens, early 20s, and he's talking.
Yeah, I like the guy a lot, but if it had been Mark, he would have talked a blue streak.
Yeah, Mark.
There's no...
Mark's a skeptic, too.
He's not that skeptical. He wants to know. He has a healthy curiosity, an objective curiosity. He wants to know. He wants you to show him.
But he always did pick on us. Teasing, in a teasing way.
It's because we're awesome.
Someday, I'm going to unearth that audio, and I'm going to play it for you guys. It was somebody's voice was oblivious to everything. He wasn't addressing either of you. You guys didn't hear him. Obviously, he didn't hear you. Just weird. Just really weird. Anyway,
do you remember what he said?
No, I don't. It was something it was a very mundane conversation. He was speaking to somebody. He was something like, oh, I think I left my socks up here. Let me go over. Let me go check. It wasn't a demonic voice, and it wasn't like a ha-ha or somebody trying to scare anybody. It was just some dude walking in the room.
I have a question about that, though. Can't living people still leave energy behind and it come back at a later time, even though that person's still living?
Yes.
I don't see why not. Echoes and impressions of ourselves, little traces of our...
Sure, you do it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see why...
You do it all the time because... I think that's on the other episode where I talk about how I discovered when I was working on homicide cases, and I had discovered that any kind of emotion that you have, emotion is a stickum, and it's very hard for us to find positive emotions. So most of it, it's very easy for us to generate negative emotion or drama. It actually left an imprint on the atoms and molecules, creating a hologram, sort of like a YouTube video of everything that the victim saw when she was dying. And we were able to solve the case with what I had seen there because I was able to get a license plate that she was seeing. So, and from there, that was years ago. And from there, I realized something about energy. We all do it. That this is one of the reasons that you should like stage your house every so often, because say like you're depressed, like you're in depression all the time. You could go out of your house and be in a really good mood, have good things happen. But as soon as you walk back into that house, you're going to walk into the same atoms and molecules that have left that depression imprint all over those atoms and molecules. And so we're much more sentient beings than what we know. And so when you walk in there, you're feeling all that again. And so what you're doing is you're absorbing your mm-hmm. own depression. And right. so say if you always sit in a certain chair and you're depressed in that chair, you could, again, you could be real happy you sit in that chair. After 4, 5, 6 minutes, you're going to be depressed again because you're absorbing all of that off the atoms and molecules that you left there. You're kind of like reading it, which is what the body mind does. It's like a big computer and it absorbs that. So most definitely, sometimes I think when people are out there and they're doing ghost investigations, that I talk about that all the time, that they're really not ghosts. What they're running into is holograms. And those holograms aren't necessarily caused by anybody dead. They're not a ghost, but they're all that power-packed emotion that the people have. So say, for example, if you go to the graveyard because you're going to see ghosts, I would say 99% of the time what you're picking up doesn't have anything to do with ghosts at all. It might be that guy that's standing there, he's devastated because his wife and two kids were killed in a car wreck. And so he's standing there and he has such powerful outpouring of emotion that it creates that hologram. So when you go in there and you're trying to find your ghost, what you're picking up is that recording of his emotion that was powerful enough to create the hologram. And that was playback and not an actual spirit. So anyway, in the answer to that question, that's my answer to that question. But it's not always good.
That is interesting. About a year ago, we were at a very old cemetery getting EVPs, and I wasn't getting human voices so much. We had one or two, but what I was hearing in the background were jingling noises, and I thought, oh, okay, it's spirits and they're playing tricks on us, ringing the bells. Oh, yeah, it's December. Happy, you know, Merry Christmas. What I found out was, and this is interesting, somebody told me that, wait a minute, Jeff, that's a very old cemetery. It dates back to the 1880s. And around that time, people were taken to the cemetery by horses, okay?
Interesting. Oh.
And so... Yeah. And they would put special bells and trinkets on the horses so people would know that it's a procession, a funeral procession, so people would take their hats off and show the respect. We heard clomping noises, too. So two things, the bells and the clomping noises. I couldn't believe it. I refused to believe it at first, but there was no other explanation. There were no horses around. This was in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. And which is pretty suburban, you know, it's just right outside of Harrisburg. There's no horses except out miles away out in the country. So just crazy.
You know, horses can be goats too. And dogs can be goats, but they cannot be ghosts. Mm-hmm. They do come back. And why? Because they can. That's what they tell me. Why are you here? Because I can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is there a correlation or some kind of connection between, okay, this is for my own personal interest because of what happened here about 2 weeks ago here in my own house. Are there correlations between ghosts and bells?
They can be. There can be. It works in a whole lot of different ways. What I've actually seen, and this is, I've actually seen where they, and kind of studied it real heavy duty years ago, but they can actually manifest things in that kind of way. And for some reason, it's easier to move certain kinds of inanimate objects than it is others. The same thing is they can also do something that's sort of like trigger sensors in your brain. Say you're thinking that you smell your dad's cologne, or you think that you smell cigar smoke. That they're actually triggering sensors of your brain so that you can smell those too.
Well, yeah, because I have had instances in this house, not all the time, but only on occasion I've smelled cigarette smoke in the bedroom, mm-hmm. in the master bedroom. Mm-hmm. And a couple weeks ago, just out of the blue, I heard this just this one bell chime. And it was clear as day, and it was very loud, and it actually woke me up. And I don't know if that was a sign that better not oversleep or whatever, you got to get go to work. But I did find out that this house used to be an old folks' home.
Oh, so you think like they had to get up to the bell?
I don't know.
It could no be. Definitely could be.
That's like, all right, everybody, up.
I've actually read and heard that phantom aromas are a fairly common and regular thing. I mean, your olfactory senses are incredibly acute. I mean, me personally, I'll notice unusual, out of place aromas before I'll start hearing things or feeling things. It literally comes to you on the air tonight. So long.
Hey, will it come to you on the what?
It literally comes to you on the air tonight. You know, like that song.
Huh.
Jeff knows the song. He's going to start singing it.
Phil Collins?
That Phil Collins.
Oh, okay. You kind of threw me there. I'm like, yeah,
no,
okay,
I didn't. You
yeah,
knew
Phil.
Where I was going with that.
Anyway, back to
before I start singing.
Phantom smells. Yes, that is one of the common occurrences. Perfume, cigarettes. It's not just cigarettes, not just in our head. Sometimes a memory will be triggered by a certain perfume.
Yes. Certain aromas even being triggered by memory.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the opposite.
True. Yeah. True.
I mean, that's why it's an unspoken rule in a lot of investigations that when you're out investigating a location, you don't smoke, you don't vape. You try not to wear any overwhelming or outstanding perfumes or colognes. Don't chew gum. Don't eat candy. Nothing that can generate any kind of strong or striking or prominent aroma of any kind, because that could potentially interfere with an investigator's findings.
But yes, and Kathy's story is, to me, that sounds definitely legit and not a setup, because
I like it.
The bells, things like that. And smelling it's there. Now, James,
especially when you're dead asleep and it actually wakes you up from a dead sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you live in a very old house, Kathy, correct?
Well, it was built back in 1968, so I wouldn't say it's that old, but getting up there. But for what it was used for, you know, an old folks home, and whether there have been any deaths in the house, I do not know.
Old folks home, I would think so.
But again, I have more of a tendency to believe that it's the emotion of the person dying and not the person's spirit that would be leaving a hologram there.
Yeah, I've only heard the bell once, though. That's only happened to me once. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Did you ever learn to say, who are you? Just say to them, you don't have to even say it out loud, just say it to yourself and say, who is it? And they'll answer. And it'll be like maybe the voice in your head, and you'll think it's your imagination, but it's not. And if you just say back to them, oh, hi, because they do sense they do know when you're sensing that they're around, and they do have a tendency to go more around people who are acknowledging them. They'll try to get you to acknowledge them. So if you say, who is this? They'll answer. And then you can pick up your imagination, but you could say, okay, so why are you stopping by today? This is an actual spirit apparition I had. This was back in 1992 in Vista, California. I opened a store. It was called Out of My Mind. And it was one of the first spiritual stores around that I know. The reason I started is because they always have like a cult back then. They talk everything was cult, and they, you know, stuck it way, way back in the bookstore. And I've never felt of it as a cult. I've always felt of being psychic. Everybody's psychic, and you just have to, just like learning how to sing better. You need to go take some lessons and learn how to be more psychic. But at any rate, so I had this bookstore, and within an old part of Vista, and I got real cheap rent, and so I had all these metaphysical books, Wayne Dyer books, all different kinds of things that are in there. And my girlfriend and I were in there. I had taught one of my Mind Magic seminars that day, which is an all-day seminar. So it was rather late. All the people had finally gone, and we were cleaning things out of there. And there was a person that came down the street and came in the door. And he had this big black fedora on, and he had this leather, kind of like a raincoat, long coat that he wore, like an older generation, kind of a long coat. And he was extremely nicely dressed. He had, it looked like, very expensive pants, very expensive shiny shoes. He had a vest on and a tie. And he had a little bit longish hair that he had kind of like in a ponytail in the back. But he was meticulously dressed, and he had gold rings and all this other kind of stuff. And I was thinking, you know, this is Southern California, so you have a lot of, it's very Mexican populated and Hispanic populated. And so I told him, I'm sorry, you know, but the store is closed. And he says, no, this is a very good time to be talking to you. I know it was a very good time. And then he introduced himself, and I don't recall the name, but I think he gave the name like Carlos Posada, something like that. And so basically it ended up, he became the teacher, and she and I sat in his chair, and we listened to him telling us all these interesting stuff. And then finally it got to be pretty late, it was about 11 o'clock. And he says, well, I better be going now. And he gave us some very personal kind of things that he said to us. So I was thinking kind of like, another clairvoyance, you know, because he said something to me about, you know, don't worry about your kids and your ex-husband and this, you know, this is going to happen and you're going to lose this kind of thing. And some things to her too. And he said, well, I have to go. And so he turns and he walks out the door. And so we kind of walked to the door to sort of like watch him go because he's such an interesting character. And when we went to the door and we looked up and down the street, there was nobody there. That he just disappeared.
Vanished.
Oh,
he was an apparition. He was an apparition. And so neither one of us were afraid. She was used to my crazy world. So we just kind of looked at each other and I said, he couldn't have disappeared. There was no, you know, there's no entryways. All the stores were closed and everything. So he wouldn't have had an escape route. He would have had to go, it's kind of like a half mile down the road till he came to the first road that allowed him to turn left or right. All the rest was storefront and there just wasn't anything there. And it was, there was enough of a moon out that if he'd been there, he would have been very visible. So anyway, that's my story of an apparition. To follow up on that, not long after that, I was making a trip back east somewhere, and I was spirited told me there's going to be a man by the name of Paul that's going to approach you in the Chicago airport. And I thought, okay, you know, I believe when they tell me something. But I wasn't supposed to go to Chicago. I was supposed to go someplace else, wherever it was, Denver or something. So we ended up that they had to change our flight because weather, and I ended up in Chicago airport with a long way over. Oh, and wow. This guy, I had Stephen Hawking's book that I was reading at the time. And so I was sitting there reading this book, and this fellow comes walking up to me, and he says, I feel so weird about this. I feel so awkward about this. And I said, no, it's okay. It's quite okay. And he said, my name is Paul.
Ooh.
And this is the amazing part of it, because the book that he handed me was The Nature of the Universe.
Oh, wow.
And that book is from like 1929. So it was something that Spirit really wanted me to see. And it is a book that just shows we're so much more connected to everything in our living world than what we even think, that there really is this, you know, it's kind of like complex equation that just sort of hooks it all together. So that's the second part of my apparition story.
That's fairly profound. Do you think that there's a reason that people see spirits and apparitions in general? Do you think some of them are just accidents, or do you think that it was meant to happen?
Yeah, I don't think there's one pat answer on that, because I've seen cases where I think the person, it was very powerful. It really affected the person to be able to see it, so they made some significant changes in their life. I've also seen where people misinterpreted that they see something and they feel like it's evil or malevolent, but it's not. It's intense. It's not evil. Intent and evil are kind of, they're side by side, but they kind of have the same kind of heaviness, but they're two different things. So I've seen that where people get afraid of something, but if you go and you talk to the spirit, it turns out they don't mean anything bad. And you know, I have to take it the way that spirit tells me. You know, once I was, many times I've been in readings and maybe somebody comes through and they're just, you know, describing this or that or the other thing, and then and the person will go, I don't think I know them. And so I say to the spirit, you know, kind of like, why are you here? And they go, oh, they're just walking by. And I need to do this, so I thought I'd stop in.
Playing through.
and tell you. So my attitude on it is when we die, we just don't have bodies anymore. And we become spirits. And so we can do that with kind of like a frame of mind. So you can kind of like go bop around and interrupt people if you want to. And to me, it's just like, you know, if we were walking down the street, we saw somebody, we go, hey, how are you doing? You know what I mean? Tap, 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 tap. And so that's kind of the idea I get with them. You know, sometimes I'll say to them, well, why are you coming to tell me that? And they'll go, because I can. And I go, oh, okay. Mm. Have a day. I got to work.
Wow. Do you know if spirits can actually see each other?
Oh yeah,
in the spiritual. Okay, so why do you always hear ghost stories about the little girl who died and is sticking around because she's looking for her mother, and the mother is actually still haunting the same location?
I can understand the attachment of child spirits and the very intense likelihood of a child's apparition. I mean, what is more intensely forlorn than a lost child? What is more primal of an attachment than a child who just wants their mommy or just wants their daddy? You've got a child's ghost. They're lost. It's that attachment keeping them there, don't you think?
No, I'm a person who believes in reincarnation. And so if you've been reincarnated 50 times, you had 50 moms. You had 50 dads. You know, so you wouldn't just like kind of like hang around for this one. You know, and it doesn't work with an age thing either. And I should explain this. And I've actually had spirits come, like I told the story earlier about them seeing my father-in-law, my dead father-in-law. They were in the dark hair and stuff. He always came back looking 38 years old. And what I figured out over time, he died in his 60s. And what I figured out, because everybody saw the same image of him, and the girl actually recognized him from a picture in our hallway. She said, oh my God, you know, that was him, when she saw the picture one day in the hall of the ghost I saw. What I figured out is he was in World War II, and when he came back, he had what would have been called post-traumatic stress disorder now, but they called it shell shock. They called it shell shock then. And so he had this breakdown. He had like five kids, and he had this breakdown, and then they put him in a mental hospital up in Cleveland, Ohio, tried to, you know, take care of him and do some therapies there. And so what I figured out, and I've seen this quite a few times, is to me, we go back to our highest vibration. And so that was a time in his life, I feel like, where he was more physically and emotionally, at 38 years old, he was more physically and emotionally together. It was like a highlight of his life before he had the breakdown. And okay. So I've seen that with other spirits, too. They'll actually come and they'll describe that. They'll say, you know, tell my daughter, you know, if she's looking for me, I don't look the same. You know, like I can walk now, or I don't have that great big stomach anymore. And if she goes and she looks for this picture, that I have a big braid from the center of my head, you know, down, and my hair is kind of reddish brown. And they'll actually say, I went back for another time. And that's what I figured out, is that there's something to do with our highest vibration in the lifetime. And so maybe that, you know, when there was less negativity, when we weren't as depressed about life or something like that, that we actually go back to that vibration. So you could have your parents not even, they wouldn't be like stuck at that age older than you.
Okay.
They wouldn't have to come back and treat you like you were the younger kid. Also, this thing that happens when the spirits go to the other side, when they become ghosts, it seems to me like where they say, in different religions, say you die and you go through this, I don't know what it is, judgment day kind of thing, and figuring out what you did good and what you did bad. But I do feel like that there is something like that. And the way that they explain it is that because you don't have a body anymore, you don't feel all of these emotions that are attached to being a human being. Mm-hmm. That you can identify with it, but you don't feel it. You don't feel pain anymore. You don't feel certain emotions because you don't have a body to feel it with anymore. That, you know the vibration of pain, right, but you don't have the same kind of pain that you did when you were alive. So it's a very, seems like it's a very malleable kind of a, you know, existence.
Okay, emotionally that makes sense because, for instance, suppose you were depressed. Depression actually causes physical pain too, lower back pain.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts. So if you're without a body anymore, you'll say, yeah, I was feeling guilty at that time when I extorted money from the company. And when mm-hmm. you're alive, you develop ulcers, and it does keep you up at night if you have a conscience, which most people do.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't think James, I heard you on a conscience.
I have a what?
I'm teasing. Conscience. I just wanted to make sure James was awake.
James has a conscience, yeah. Don't you, James?
Today I do.
James has a lot of stories. And you were talking about the demon story about the hand that came and grabbed you across the chest.
A slightly shorter but no less intense story was from when I was living up in Erie for a few months. I got into this lovely little ranch home that I eventually started affectionately referring to as Murder House. You know, it was just a nice little ranch home, full basement, couple bedrooms. You know, immediately I started noticing the oddness about the house. The previous tenant, I guess he went around and he did a lot of his own wiring and electrical work. The fuses were all, looked like they'd been custom rewired to slightly more efficient settings. There were wires running here and there and everywhere in the basement. The little detached garage was just loaded with the previous, I guess that was the other dude's tools. Some really, really gnarly, freaky looking old hand tools all rusted out and such hanging from the rafters in the garage. There were coils of rope and chain here and there and everywhere mostly out there in the garage. Downstairs, there was this enormous semi-finished basement. It was really, really clean, really organized, shelves and shelves of tools and odds and ends and such and so forth. It's kind of like picked up his stuff and left one day and wasn't able to take everything with him, or just maybe even mysteriously vanished. There were long cables running from end to end along the ceiling, and it didn't appear to serve any purpose, but it looked weird and suspicious. There's also his workbench that was left down there. Nice little workbench, plenty of tools and stuff, just left set there gathering dust. And this little wooden sign on the pegboard over the back of the desk that just said "bye," B-Y-E.
Hmm.
Yeah, the vibes I got off this place. Oh, almost forgot the best part. The basement door locked from the outside. The kind of locks you'd put on a door if you were trying to keep something in the basement.
Yep. I actually have doors in my house that are exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. Creepy.
Yeah. The attic was very similar. I made it a point to stay out of the attic as long as humanly possible. One day I did finally end up having to go up there. Found all these antiques. The most striking one in particular was an old record player, though. Just gave me all kinds of weird vibes.
Like a Victrola?
No, like one of those old self-contained turntable speaker units. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It great shape. Okay. I think if I could find the right, if I could have found the right collector, they'd love the heck out of it. Just it was amazing shape. Just really, really old.
All right.
But I always got this really, this intense feeling that I was not alone in the house. And I was alone in that house for two, almost 3 months, I think. It was, despite being a little suburb and eerie with on a cul-de-sac and everything, I spent the vast bulk of my time up there completely alone. So maybe it was cabin fever, though. To fight off the cabin fever, I would go on walks around the neighborhood and such and so forth. Once all the snow finally melted, that was that really awful year for winter up in Erie where there were like 3 and 4 foot snowdrifts. And it just kept coming and coming. I think that year the surface of Lake Erie froze down to 14 feet, I think. Somebody can feel free to correct me on that.
Yeah, I remember being cold.
It was either the second worst or third worst winter recorded in Erie history. I am prone to lucid dreaming. He said there was a presence in that house. The one night I'm sitting watching TV way, way late. I keep the lights on in the house when I was there. And, you know, I guess I dozed off on the couch, except I immediately transitioned over to that waking dream state. And it just, you know, felt like I was still sitting on the couch watching television. And the couch is along a wall in the living room. I can see immediately down the hallway to the bedrooms. And, oh, God, the light at the end of the hall kind of flickered for a second. It didn't go out. That right there was kind of like a warning trigger to me that something weird was definitely about to happen. And sure enough, out of my room, it was a skeleton, a bloody skeleton. No meat, no tendon, no skin, no nothing. Just from the base of the spine up, it just came crawling out of my room. Just slowly pulling it just pulled itself up to the edge of the living room. And I blinked and it was gone and I was awake again. It wasn't screaming or making noise or leaking or dripping or anything like that. It just commando crawled, pulled itself up the hallway, and that was it. I'm not even sure that whatever it was knew I was there.
That is creepy.
Yeah. No communication, no contact, no noise.
Just well, when I become a ghost, I think you'd be a great person to haunt.
It was, that was the night that I decided to sleep on the couch. When I did finally fall asleep.
Wow.
Ghosts don't like people to sleep on couches.
No.
I'm teasing.
Eventually, you know, the presence that I was getting in the house was getting heavier and heavier to the point that walking through the house from room to room just felt like an effort. Harder to move, harder to breathe. Whatever I was sharing the house with was working real hard to make its presence felt.
You saw the sign by BYE.
Yeah.
Do you think that was the presence of the man who left under mysterious circumstances?
I am uncertain. I had asked the neighbors and they couldn't remember they couldn't remember the last person who lived in the house. I mean, the one neighbor was just fresh out of the Air Force and he had only been living in his house for, I think he moved in just before winter set in. Yeah, and the house on the other side of me was a group home for the mentally disabled. And their caretaker came and went, and she didn't know anything about it at all either. But one day I could not wait to get out of my walk. I had to get out of the house, and I was gone for a while. And I'm dragging my feet, heading back home, and it's like, I don't want to do this. I do not want to go in my own freaking home, even knowing what I feel I know about the paranormal and supernatural. And I decided that it's got to stop. It's trying to communicate with me. I need to communicate back. I don't know how this is going to go. I know what happened last time I dealt with something like this. I'm not looking forward to it, but I got to try anyways. So I got back home and I stood there with the door open. Like, just stood there right in the doorway. And I was like, hey, look, I know you're here. I know you're here first. I don't know why you're still here, but I live here now too. We have to share the house. I'm not going to make you leave. You don't have to leave if you don't want to. You don't have to stay if you don't want to. We can share the house. I want to share the house. If you have something you want to say to me, say it. If you want to communicate with me, communicate. I'm here. I will listen, but I'm not going anywhere. We have to cohabitate. We have to find a way to make this work. And immediately the pressure lifted. Suddenly I could breathe normal. I didn't ache standing there in the living room. And honestly, I didn't have another experience the entire rest of the time that I was there. So I guess maybe it is, in my opinion, maybe that's all it really wanted. To know that, you know, we could be cool. We could be copacetic. We could be quote unquote housemates or roommates and live peaceably, amicably. I mean, it didn't try to make its presence known to me any further. I mean, I knew it was still there, but it wasn't overwhelming and oppressive. It didn't try to interact with me at all. It wasn't no more. I had actually heard the floorboards creaking and heard little knocks and ticks and scratches in the walls. All of that stopped. Even the spiders stopped. That house had the worst fucking problem.
Sometimes if you just acknowledge them, if you go, oh yeah, I know you're here. I hear you. Who is there? Because all that they're trying to do, they're not trying to be evil. They're just trying to get your attention. They know you can feel them and you can sense them. And they're just kind of trying to get you to acknowledge it. Real life, if somebody was just standing beside you, not saying anything, wouldn't you try to get them to say something?
Well, that appears to have been the case in this particular instance. For the remaining few weeks that I was there, no problems at all whatsoever. I can't say what's happened since somebody else moved into the house. I haven't gone. Honestly, it's not my business. I'm not just going to suddenly show up at their door one day and say, hey, I used to live in this house. Are you guys having problems with the ghost? Because nobody likes that.
Right.
And how do you even open that?
You could be more sensitive, sentient to these types of phenomena, whereas somebody is like stone cold dead to it. They, you know,
I feel bad for the people that moved into my grandfather's house.
You feel bad about what?
I said I feel bad for the people who moved into my grandfather's house. My God.
Yeah.
Again, that's part of going back. You'll have to go back and listen to the first two episodes to hear that whole story. Real, real nightmarish scenario for me personally. In fact, that whole episode, I was there for like a month, about a good month. Like the previous 6 months leading up to when I was there were just horrible. And again, now that we've sold the house, I keep wanting to reach out to the people who actually live in the house now, but I don't know how to contact them, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's how do you open up a conversation to lead up to that, especially from a complete stranger?
Right. Especially if they have small children.
Yeah, right.
I think the closest thing I ever, something that had powers, was one night I was out at a cemetery. It was a Revolutionary War Soldier Cemetery in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And I was out with Rhonda, who I do believe attracts spirits. Don't you, Kathy?
Yes.
And
I feel it.
It's gotten most incredible results when she was there.
Yeah, Rhonda just has something about
her. Something, some kind of aura that attracts it.
I've never met anybody like her.
So we were in the car together and we were getting the equipment ready. It was just her and myself talking about her new manager or something along those lines. Just general chit-chat, nothing to do with the paranormal. And we were parked across the street from a cemetery and the parking lot of a McDonald's restaurant and a bank. So all of a sudden, when she's talking, we hear this boom on top of the roof of my car, affectionately known as Bob. And we looked at each other like, did you hear that? you don't think of spirits. You think of some knucklehead who threw something at your car. So I got my wits about me and I was ready to think, you know, who in the hell did this? All of a sudden, we hear boom, boom on top of the roof. And this time I'm pissed. I wasn't thinking spirits or demons at that time. We both got out of the car and we looked and there was nobody around. And there were people walking around at McDonald's and it was loud enough for them to hear it, but nobody turned their head or anything like that. So we get back in the car and we're thinking, this is too weird. All of a sudden, about 20 seconds later, we hear a boom, boom, and then a slight thud. And I thought, oh my God, it's a bird or something. Some kind of, maybe it's a falcon or a hawk or a vulture hit the top of my car. But we felt the force inside the car because a Honda Element doesn't have a lot of insulation in it. It's an inexpensive SUV. We get up out of our seats, look around, nothing there. Wasn't a bird because we didn't see feathers, because whatever hit the top of the car, if it made that kind of noise and that kind of had that much kinetic energy, there'd be blood or something there. Nothing. No dents, no evidence of anything whatsoever. No stains. Car was bone dry. No rocks around. And again, there's people parked, I don't know, maybe 10 feet away from us. And you would think that they would say, hey, dude, somebody's messing with your car. Nothing. They didn't hear a thing. They just went about their business. I thought, we got to get out of here. This isn't good. And Rhonda's like, no, I'm going over to that cemetery across the street and I'm going to investigate. Now, this place, like I said, Revolutionary War Soldiers Cemetery, very, very old headstones. It looks haunted. She's in there and she goes, by the way, we have walkie-talkies. If you hear me yelling and screaming for you, you better come running and help me out. I'm like, yeah, I'll be right behind you. Walking across the street.
Right.
So anyway, I'm here. I am walking around with my walkie-talkie.
Running the opposite
trip. Well, yeah. This is the only time I was ever scared, because when you hear something like that, and it wasn't your own imagination, because a live person right next to you heard the same thing, had the same reactions. She's out there investigating. Mm-hmm. It's getting near dark. It was in the summertime, so it was about 9:15. Dusk was setting in. And she's in there roaming around the cemetery. And about 15 minutes later, she goes, tell you what, Jeff, I didn't hear or feel or see a thing in there. So let's go. But we're both still weirded out. Anyhow, we go to the town of Boiling Springs about 5 miles away. That night, we got EVPs, and we think that something followed us because we got two incredibly clear EVPs, which I'll list on the episode link for this show. One stating a man's name, and another was a female voice that seemingly either whispered in my ear or right into my EVP recorder the word, sweetheart. Sweetheart. Now, who uses that kind of language anymore? You know, That's old. I know, but that's really old language. Well, yeah, well, you're a romantic. So something followed us there. And that's the night we also got the weird picture. I took a picture of the cemetery and there were no headlamps around in our direction, not headlamps, cemetery lamps in our direction. Took a picture out about 80, 90 feet away. Two headstones were lit up like Yankee Stadium. I couldn't believe it. And we went out the next day to look for lamps. There were none in that direction whatsoever. None at all. By the picture, we found out which grave was lit up. And it was of a young girl who had died in an accident. She was thrown from a horse. And this is fairly recent, about 10 years ago. And we went and got some flowers and a plastic horse figurine and put it on her grave, you know, a week later, and made up our minds never to go there again. Maybe it was just because we had been there a few times. So anyway, that was a crazy night.
Yeah, what is it with Rhonda and cemeteries? Because we had an experience when she was living in North Carolina.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I had gone back to visit, and we just decided to, you know, during the night, drive around to various locations in North Carolina, and I think we even might have even gone into Virginia just across the border. And we stopped at this one really old cemetery, like it was out in the sticks, it seemed like. I mean, it seemed like, but it was still, I mean, there were no street lights, there were nothing, and it was pitch black.
Oh, they're the best.
And, right. Yeah, well, I wasn't too thrilled, to tell you the truth, but we get out of the car, and Rhonda had this huge spotlight. I mean, it was so bright. It literally lit up the entire cemetery, and she yeah. was, I was trying to get my camera set up and ready to go, and I started snapping some pictures of her walking through the cemetery, and before I know it, my camera just would not work. I couldn't push the button to get it to click or do anything. And finally, the spotlight died, and of course, that freaked Rhonda out. So she came back to the car, and I said, my camera's, and I told her, I said, my camera's not working. I don't know what the problem is. And she says, well, are there, do you have new batteries? I said, yeah, I just put fresh new batteries in it, but no problem with that. And, so she says, okay, well, the spotlight's dead. I don't want to hang around here anymore. So, you know, something like that. She says, this place is creeping me out. And I says, okay, well, so we hit a gas station. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to check the camera again. Sure enough, I turned it on. It was working fine. And I started going through the pictures, wondering if I had gotten anything because I couldn't get the camera button to press down to actually take a picture, and I kept seeing these jagged lines like electricity through the pictures. And then in the last one, I looked down in the corner and it looked like this face was there. And we saw that, and we just like, we were so freaked out. I mean, I don't know what the heck it was. It wasn't a skeleton, but it was like somebody that looked like they were so emaciated that they were almost dead. Yeah, and you could see the Adam's apple and the whole nine yards, and it was just really bizarre. I've never had that happen to me before.
That's pretty cool.
I'm going to find that and put it on the show link for this show. It does look like somebody who... Yeah. I'm thinking maybe typhoid fever or some kind of disease around the turn of the century, not this one, but the one before, that basically draw you along to a death.
Yeah, it was just really bizarre. And unfortunately, the way the picture, you almost kind of have to be in a dark room with no lights on, you know, to have, bring it up on the computer screen for you to see it. But it was just really odd.
It is very impressive, but it's impressive to the point where people think that it was manufactured, that you got into Photoshop and did something with it. And, but I, you know.
Well, actually, I could kind of see where they would think that. I mean, I was freaked out by it, and I don't even know how to Photoshop anything. I am, I'm even worse than Rhonda when it comes to technology. And as a matter of fact, I thought my camera was broken. I thought I had banged it or dropped it or something. And then when we were back in the car and in a well-lit area, like at a gas station, and it was functioning fine, I thought, oh, okay, well, maybe I just did something wrong. And then when I saw that picture, it was like, OMG. Holy crap. If other people want to call it fake, that's them. You know, I don't care.
Oh.
I know.
Well, you didn't get that all the time anyway.
Yeah, I know what I saw in the picture. Rhonda saw it. As a matter of fact, Rhonda out. And she says, oh, yeah, I think she started chain smoking after that.
Yeah, runs.
That was a tape measure home run, that picture.
Right? Yeah, I'd like to see that, too.
She just attracts weird things, like us.
Yeah.
Yes, she does.
She finds the strangest people in every town she moves to.
Yes, she does.
No offense, Kathy.
She just has this magnetic personality to both the living and evidently the dead, too. It's innate. I mean,
you got that right.
Yeah.
Now, it seems like everyone is a friend who thinks that the paranormal is too far out for their tastes. but they love to have their own ghost stories told. My friend for many years, Mike Goodwin, is one of those people who often runs into the Twilight Zone. He didn't have a car at the time, so he'd always catch a ride home with me, and I used to love his stories, except the problem was, on the way back from where we were working, it was along dark roads near Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Farmers' fields to the left, to the right. And his stories just weirded me out, and he's actually not a paranormal person. That's another reason he didn't come on the show. Why he would get these apparitions and not even be looking for them or be interested is beyond me. He would, one time he opened up a door and he saw a man and a woman smiling at him, walking down the stairs. Now, they weren't entirely three-dimensional like we are. They were translucent, in other words.
Opaque.
He could tell that they were their clothing was from the 1920s or 30s. They were walking down the stairs and just smiling at him a little bit. And I'm like, didn't that scare the crap out of you? He goes, no, I was just looking at him. And a very unassuming man.
We should have should sit down and see if we can convince him to.
Yeah, I'd like to get him on. He said, there's only one problem, Jeff. He goes, well, only half of those stairs still exist.
Yeah.
Those stairs were cut off and the house was remodeled back in the 1960s. And they kept walking. And I said, what did you do? He goes, I shut the door. I didn't want to see the rest of that.
Can you blame
him? I didn't want to see the rest of that video.
Honestly, can you blame him?
He's seen it more than one time, the same location, and they're walking along.
He's just got the
places
got
where going through walls. He hears the old fashioned music playing in the background.
I want to sit and talk with him, especially face to face if we can.
1920s jazz, just crazy stuff.
Nice. Yeah. Super nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll have to sit down and actually like meet with him. I don't know, go out to the bookstore or something. You're not going to have to worry about sounding like an idiot because
we're doing
the best.
Kathy, you did a great job. At the last spur of the moment, I got a hold of Kathy because I know she loves the stories and she has some good ones. Kathy, you had a good time.
Yes, I did. Yay!
And Lindy always has a great time.
Oh, yeah, I always have a good time. I had a good time. I have all kinds of good stories.
Definitely.
And I want to let our listeners know that if you have a story you want to tell, email it to us. Give us permission in your email. We'll post it up on the website. Who knows? Maybe we'll even invite you on the show to tell your story sometime.
Because we want to do another ghost episode in December. Christmas time, great ghost story time.
Christmas ghost stories. Christmas ghost stories.
They're the best.
If you've got some Christmas ghost stories especially, send them in to us. I mean, I know it's not even Halloween is only like in 9 days, but still, Christmas, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Tuesday, whenever. With permission, we'll post it. We're not going to laugh at you. We're not going to call you crazy. Telling the stories is important. Somebody sooner or later will look at you and go, oh my God, that is so cool. That's how it happens. That's how the magic happens.
One of the things that I know is the best way for somebody to no longer be skeptic is when it happens to them.
Yeah, I know.
I've always said you could be a skeptic as you want to, but it's happening to me.
Oh, you'd be surprised how many people have a ghost story.
Yeah,
I mean, it worked. She would not shut up until she got the story out, but it was a good one. It's about Penn State football.
Penn State is crazy haunted. It really, really is.
And if anybody wants to hear me talking to a spirit, you actually posted that show where I have a client and I'm talking to a spirit and passing messages on to her.
Yes.
And that's one of your unnormal paranormal shows too. Okay, guys. Well, I'm going to go. It's been great. So great to meet you all.
Yep. Same here. See you guys later.
Take care.
Bye.
Yep. Bye.
Good night, everybody.
And that's our show for today. We hope that you enjoyed your time with us. We will be assembling another Ghost Stories episode closer to the holidays, and if you'd like to participate or have your story read during the episode, send us what you have at unnormalparanormal@gmail.com. Stay with us next week as we discuss the 1949 St. Louis exorcism case and haunted Route 66 with author and filmmaker Stephen LaChance. And so, until next time, good night.